name is Tana. I'm an addict.
Hi.
Morning, everyone. Thanks for coming to a 9 a.m. workshop. These are the troopers, right? You're here at 9 o'clock?
No, we wouldn't.
We're hardcore service junkies. This is our conventions and events, best practices and tools workshop, and I'd love to start this off with a moment of silence, serenity prayer. So we'll do that right now. God, grant us the serenity to accept the things we cannot change, the courage to change the things we can, and the wisdom to know the difference. All right, thanks everybody. Again, I'm Tom, I'm an addict. I'm a member of your world board.
Steve, I'm an addict. I'm a fellowship services team leader at NAA World Services.
Steve.
And I'm Dee. I'm a project coordinator at NAA World Services.
Hey, Dee, good morning. Alrighty. We also have joining us, we have Nick coming in.
Hello. Hi, everyone. Good
morning.
Good morning.
Hi, Nick. Nick's up.
Who are you? What do you do?
Oh, I'm Nick. I'm an addict. I'm a writer, editor, and I will show you.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Oh, Jack's here.
And Jack's here. Well, along with half my region.
Excellent. Alright, well, Jack's another member of our world board, so. That's all our intros here. Okay, so the 2016 CAR, I'm sure many of you remember, contained a literature survey, and among the items that were surveyed were the questions, what is the fellowship looking for new service materials? And there was a plethora of items offered and opportunities to write in additional ideas, and what the regional delegates, you know, discussed the survey with your communities. And what you came back with, it's also available online. So in addition to the official reporting that came back through the regional delegates, we were also able to get input from individual members who, you know, filled out the survey online. And what came back, what we learned at the conference, was that new material, service material on conventions and events was priority, was one of our priorities. And that's what we're going to be talking about today. It was one of the top three priorities that was selected. So this workshop today is going to help us identify some of the best practices and challenges associated with conventions and activities. And instead of our past approach where we would, you know, put together a thick handbook on stuff, what we're looking towards now is something more of a toolbox, may have several elements in it, and that's something else that we're looking to hear what your ideas and thoughts might be on that. What would be most useful to individual trusted servants, to your area events committee, to your regional conventions committee? What would be the most useful tools that we could assemble from service bodies and trusted servants worldwide and put together in a toolbox that would be available, you know, for our members and service bodies? So those are also some of the ideas that we're hoping to collect today. Part of the reason for the individual pieces in something like a toolbox is they are much more easily updatable, more easily translatable than, you know, a thick manual. So that's part of the thinking behind the smaller pieces. We're going to be having online sign-up on na.org. We'll have web pages devoted to each of the projects that came out of the strategic plan, but specifically on this one, there will be an online sign-up in the near future where you can contribute information, where you can let members of your own local and regional conventions or events, activities, also sign up to give input, and also on the web page itself, see the progress of the input we've received, the progress on the project itself, you know, for reporting back to your communities. These pieces here, I just want to point out also, these were the other priorities that were selected among the, in the survey items. So there was a group service toolbox, which is another thing we'll be developing this cycle, tools for local services and areas and for groups itself. Those two were both ranked very highly, so we've combined that into a local services toolbox. And then the events and conventions handbook here. So these were the most highly ranked on the responses. We've got the dark lines would be the regional responses, and then the yellower lines were the individual member responses that came on the website. And you can see what some of the other items were that were offered out. So one of the things I've definitely wanted to hear a little bit about is some of what not to do. I think that we've all had personal experiences or heard a few stories of some of the things that don't want, that we don't want replicated either where we live and serve or in the other communities where we might attend events or attend conventions. And so I would like to hear from you guys what some of your experiences are there. And while it, you know, may sound like a funny thing, nobody's laughing, none of us are laughing at the individual events, but these are things that we want to make sure that these are experiences that we can share so that others can learn from our experiences and not have to make these mistakes ourselves. So like where I come from, for example, I've seen repeatedly, which I don't understand why, repeatedly a pattern of having one signature on a bank account. Even though I have known and members of my areas and region have known for many years that we recommend two signatures on a bank account. And yet here we are, decades of Narcotics Anonymous clean time and service experience, and we will form, you know, some convention or some event with just one signature on the bank account, and the money sometimes gets misappropriated. I've had that, you know, I've seen that a few times over, so.
The problem we have is that when we have two signature accounts, the bank don't care. Yeah. The bank will cash it with a single signature.
Well, okay.
See, everybody.
You're talking about two different things. You're talking about two signatures on a
check.
She's talking about more than one signature
on a contract.
Those are two different things, right?
Oh, you're talking about on a contract.
On the account.
Well, I think what we are talking about is exactly the kind of practice that we.
About the check.
Well,
it's different.
So where I come from, it's been a problem that the checks don't have the two signatures that are required on the account.
Yeah, so
our accounts have multiple signatures as well.
What our problem is we try to do that, but the bank doesn't care.
Yeah.
And everybody knows in our fellowship that the bank doesn't care.
And we have processes to protect that.
So we're interested in
So first of all, this is like Dragnet, right? The names are changed to protect the innocent, okay? So we can tell our stories, but, you know, and you know, let's try and keep them short, because we all get nightmares, but this is just kind of start getting the blood flowing on Saturday morning at 9 o'clock in the morning. Go ahead.
Yes, George from Washington, Idaho. And one of the things, just really briefly about that, audit procedures are the best thing to...
Yeah, we're talking about nightmares,
about so the nightmare that I've seen repeatedly, specifically for a Seattle convention that we started up a few years back, is that a committee that comes in and wants to change just the organization of a room, and they don't realize that every time you change the organization of a room, union-based team has to come in and change it.
Right.
And so we instead of planning and setting a plan and stopping, we're like kind of loosey-goosey about it. No, we'll just put rounds in there. Oh, they won't mind. And then we end up with this bill at the end.
Oh my God.
That ends up being more than the bill of the whole room just because of changes.
Yeah.
Yikes, that's bad.
Yep.
One of the nightmares we have is trying to hang the banners of all of the conventions that have been there before. And
drag them around.
And the retro of the crane.
Yeah,
there's not enough room anymore.
It used to be a problem. It was like, you know,
when you were 10 conventions.
SNASNA 1 or SNASNA 5, and now it's SNASNA 33. You know?
Right.
Go ahead, in the back.
Personal bank run on Kurt Automatic.
Hey, Kurt.
Personal bankrolling of convention for campouts. We do a lot of campouts in Colorado.
So individuals put out the front money.
Yep.
Okay, that's an interesting nightmare. Yeah.
Yeah, I've been reminded that to make sure the recording is capturing the remarks from the floor, that I'm supposed to repeat some of these things. So I'm going to try to do that, and correct me if I don't get it captured.
Yeah.
So the one that you just shared was.
Personal bankrolling
of conventions and events. And Biff talked about trying to hang three decades worth of banners.
Or more
for some of our events. And George talked about moving the furniture around in a union facility and getting a really big invoice afterwards. Okay. And then the first thing we talked about was the difficulties with banks between multiple signatures on the account versus multiple signatures on a check and whether or not the bank actually cares about what we tried to establish. Okay, so I think those were the four things so far. And then the gentleman over there.
Merchandise that doesn't arrive the way it was intended for sale.
Oh, that's a bad one.
We had yoga pants last year at Clean and Free in the large sizes, and when people tried to put them on, their fingers went through the fabric.
Sorry.
A second problem we have with in Washington, Urban, Idaho, with our conventions, we just had it yesterday, is our till's not balancing. We have people trained to work cash registers, we do our best, and we often find pretty significant hundreds of dollar discrepancies between what we believe should be the till according to how it's run and what's actually there.
Yep.
All right, so quality of the merchandise being different than what was ordered or expected or agreed upon, and the tills not matching up at the end of a session.
Cash handling challenges.
Cash handling challenges.
So one of the biggest nightmares I've ever seen was a convention committee had, an individual had signed a contract for a convention committee that guaranteed that the committee was going to provide to the hotel 2 weeks prior to the event, $200,000. $200,000.
Yikes.
One of the worst nightmares I've ever seen.
Again,
the name of the Peggy Innocent.
Right, we will not use any names here. There was a hand over there. Hi.
I'm Jim and Addie from the New England region. I can tell of a nightmare that I'm still reliving, and that is at our regional convention two ago. We went to the bank on a Saturday of our meeting and found that our balance was like $12.50, which had been like $12,500.
Hey.
And the problem, and we're getting out of it, and we're coming around on the other side of it, but we let a single individual go from being the president of the corporation, the clerk of the corporation, to the treasurer of the corporation, and go from position to position and realize that no one was really watching the handout. So shame on us as directors for not following it, but that certainly was a nightmare. Not a $200,000 nightmare, but still a pretty big nightmare for us.
Well, that most certainly is finding out
the $200,000 nightmare, the same exact situation.
Yeah, and I talk to people every day who, you know, 10,000, 20,000, 40,000, 5,000, you lose a lot of money. And the irony is that all of us have experience, and if you put us all in the same room, we could avoid almost all of these situations. If the collection of our experience and our understanding. And so, you know, that's what this endeavor is hoping to resolve in. Is a booklet that's a collection of best practices of our experiences to help avoid some of these problems.
Yeah. One of the problems we have is the way we handle newcomer packages or indigent packages, and what we do, sometimes these people that have to qualify for them walk out of there feeling less than, and some of the other times is people take advantage of it. And, the other thing is we're still not sure whether to call them newcomer packages or indigent packages, because you don't have to have 90 days to not have any money in your pocket. You can have 20 years and not be able to afford to go to a convention. We do have a solution that has helped, but we are not solutions yet.
Hey, Bonner.
Bonner, I want to say, having good rapport between the host committees on a convention subcommittee.
So the nightmare is?
The nightmare was this is a personal experience that I had with, I was the liaison for the smallest convention in our region, and we had a beef with the biggest host committee. I don't remember what it was, but I ended up filing the Concept 10 grievance against the host committee, and it never really resolved.
So the nightmare is the disintegrated relationship between those two committees?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
Kirk.
Kirk, I think one of the nightmares that I've seen being a public information, public relations guy, is that we don't utilize the opportunity with our conventions and our events to engage the public and let them know about narcotics and all this. in Colorado, we have, you know, it's the one time a year we come together over a wide geographic span, so we don't involve community in that process, and it seems like such a lost opportunity for everybody that wants or needs to know about us.
Yeah, it's not a nightmare, but it is a lost opportunity, right? And you know, one of the things that, I'm just going to spend a minute on this. One of the things that the World Convention does now is we recognize that there's a PR component to that event, and we invite professionals and have a, you know, what others would call, we have a reception hour. I'm going to call it a cocktail hour, but that's not really appropriate, right? So we'll call it a reception hour, where, you know, there's some refreshments and some interaction with board members are typically there. And then we invite them to our Saturday night main meeting, because where better can you show the energy of an impact of Narcotics Anonymous, the program, in fellowship, than that at the Saturday night main meeting. So it is something that other communities are looking at, and it wasn't a nightmare, but we talked about it for a second. Anyways, a couple more nightmares, then we can move on, right?
Sure thing.
Thank goodness.
With this gentleman here.
Greg Ed.
Hey, Greg.
A lot of times, and I've done about 16 convention contracts, is when I get the schedule laid out in the beginning, and the program committee wants to expand their program down to a certain time, and the hotel staff don't have time to move chairs for the main banquet or speaker meeting, and then they get upset because they want some of the workshops. We need to cut them off at a certain time, and then we can't get all the people in time because there's not enough seating.
Yeah, setting, resetting, and the ramifications of that, yeah.
That's a good one. George?
Not knowing who else is at the facility at the same time. We had a regional convention our last year in Pasco, I think, and the Washington State Republican Convention was at the same city, same hotel, same time. Yeah. Not that there's a problem for some people in the fellowship, but there's...
We had a Miss Universe contest going on at the same time.
So Republican National Convention.
All right. These are some major challenges. We had one hand right here we hadn't heard from. Hi.
I'm an advocate, Doug.
Hey, Doug.
So one of the nightmares that I've experienced repeatedly with convention and event committees is subcommittees not understanding the word sub.
Yeah.
And becoming thinking pseudo autonomy, and they go rogue.
Yep.
And literally at the last minute ordering extra merchandise that the event committee didn't approve, but yet we're contractually engaged, inviting speakers without notifying the rest of the committee that they're even being considered. So, and then I can go on from there, but essentially subcommittees not understanding sub.
Well, I think that's a really good one. We came up with a lot of good ones. I got to share just a couple that came to my mind from my own experiences. One recent one that seems to be going on over where on my side of where I live is convention committees taking a sort of an autonomy with the money and saying, we worked really hard, let's, you know, have a $2,000 catered event for ourselves, for the committee. And that's actually become rather prevalent in some places because they think they have that autonomy, they raise this money, they haven't decided how much to give to the area or to the region. And they've had some really, you know, massive catered breakfasts, dinners, they're in a couple of grand range just for the members of the committee. So that's a new one. I mean, I didn't see that in the 80s or the 90s.
Wow.
And then the last one, of course, was people frying food in their hotel rooms and selling it, and the hotels don't like that. We've had that at some of our New York conventions.
We had a site selection that went off rogue and promised the hotel room to be there so that they'd come this whole party for their weekend there, and then we had to buy out of that contractual agreement.
Yes. So some of the great experiences that we've had, I want to hear about some of those. I can tell you one that that I remember feeling really, really good about was a convention where we had some professional panels, including some judges. And those judges got to see for the very first time some people that they had sentenced a very long time ago who now had years in recovery, who were, you know, living and enjoying life as productive members of society. and got to meet with them again. So they often see the bad side of of addiction, of course, but not the recovery side that comes afterwards. And that was something I felt was a tremendous success in the convention that did that. It was a personal success for the members themselves who recognized and knew those judges, and I think made a lasting public relations difference.
So that's a type of PR opportunity, right? We
yes.
were talking about that earlier,
yeah. Yeah, in a criminal justice panel, getting some of the local judges in. So tell me some of your big successes. Hey.
Matt, I'm an addict.
Hey, Matt.
I was at a Rio Grande region convention years ago, and one thing I witnessed, they brought in actual inmates, people that were incarcerated
yes.
at the time, to be there for a Saturday afternoon. And that was an extremely powerful exchange to see how H&I yeah. has been working in these fellows' lives, and then for these guys to be able to get out for an afternoon and see what's available for them on the outside.
Wow. That is huge.
So there's a couple of interfaces with criminal justice. There's that one that happens occasionally. More often we're seeing the telephone or internet connection,
that
happen,
lights,
right?
Yeah,
folks are doing that. Anybody using Mixlr? Mixlr is a $20 a month internet service provider, internet service that allows you to upload the stream. That's what we use at the World Convention. And it could literally cost us $20 beyond the facility expenses for dropping the internet line and that kind of thing. It cost us $20 to stream the Brazil World Convention day meetings. $20. We couldn't believe it.
The entire convention. Spell
that. $20 for the entire convention. We streamed all 4 meetings.
No, spell it. Mixlr.
Mixlr.
L.
Oh, that's fascinating. I didn't even know about that one.
One of the successes we had is in that whole thing with the indigents and stuff. What we do is ask them what they wish to do to volunteer to be of service to the convention so that they now feel a part of.
Okay.
And that's kind of like what goes along with giving them the package. And, they don't feel like they're getting something for nothing. They feel like they're paying their way.
Nice. What do you guys call those packages? You call them indigent packages? Or?
We're still confused.
Okay.
It depends on who the host committee is that week, what they're calling.
Okay. Hey, George.
I'll talk about recent success with Seattle International Convention. Our program committee really, the whole theme of the committee really centered around, we came up with this phrase, a change of perspective. Then I looked up change in perspective, got out there was a chapter 7 of Living Clean, and we used every single bullet or heading in Living Clean as a program
nice.
Title. And the program was like jelly. I mean, it just gelled so well.
Wow.
Because there was a really good thematic approach to the way it came together.
I like that. So it was using the chapters of Living Clean, the titles as the program?
No, subchapters of chapter 7.
Subchapters of chapter 7. Yeah. Subchapters
of chapter 7. Anybody in Philadelphia?
Yeah.
There were 77 workshops in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
If you count what he just described, you'll find 77 sections in Living Clean. We did exactly the same thing.
And
wow.
And it fell out beautifully.
It worked really well.
Nice. Very cool. Hey.
Yes, so at NCCA, we basically, Bruce Attic. So at NCCA, we basically did the same thing using the event as a PR opportunity. We invited the addiction medicine specialists, and that workshop was packed.
Okay.
It was a workshop, unbelievable. That's where it's interesting what the medicine side of it is.
Yep. Addiction medical. Is that at a regional convention?
That was a regional.
Okay.
Yep.
Fantastic. Well, how many people in this room have been on committees that have put on the conventions themselves? We have a lot of, almost everybody here has direct experience with that. Okay. So Yeah.
One of the things we do is we've gotten proclamations from the mayor or whoever the official is there proclaiming the convention and what it's there for.
Nice.
I love that.
That's excellent.
Or at least a letter.
Right.
What about contracts? Contract negotiations. Tell me some successes with contract negotiations.
The gentleman right there.
Yeah, multi-year contracts.
Yeah.
The good thing about multi-year contracts is that if you do it right, you can get the first year's rates all the way through to the 6 years, what we did in Arizona. And the Hill Properties gave us a disclaimer for the hospitality room to be in the open area.
Say that again, Hill did what?
The Hill Properties allowed us to sign a disclaimer so that we can have a hospitality room in one of the rooms instead of in someone else's room, in the open area room. Marriott won't do that.
No, Marriott won't do that.
You know, and that was pretty successful because the hospitality room thing was a lot bigger. We get squeezed into that suite, which is whenever we get squeezed into that suite, we create damage.
Nice. So, you know, with your successes here, we would definitely want to hear, just like this, things that you would recommend. If you were making recommendations for other regions, for other areas, events and conventions, what would you want to tell them, you know, to help them, their event be run more smoothly? Jack had his hand up, and then the gentleman there.
Yeah, I think that was 350 wanted to open an RV. We just finished our regional convention. One of the things that we've done is we contract for space, not locking us up into food and beverage minimums and room blocks, so that we actually know how much the space is going to cost walking in the door. And then we've also, part of that is our hospitality group, the hotel allows us to bring our own coffee and snacks.
Wow.
That was part of the contract. So that really worked out. And that all came from, we had hospitality suites in the hotel tower, and the security people wouldn't let people go upstairs without a key. So
interesting.
They worked with us in order to put that hospitality right on the convention floor.
So the first point was, the contract doesn't have food and beverage minimums. So I just want to take a moment to about 2 years ago, I was at an event that was hosted by the convention industry, by the hotel industry. And a professional from the hotel industry got up and said, we just went through a horrible recession. We lost $8 billion as an industry, and we plan on making every dime of it back. And you can forget about the sweetheart contracts that you used to see from us. If you've been working with a property for 20 years, that doesn't matter anymore. So it seems that there's been a shift in the way hotels are approaching the negotiation for contracts. So like many of us, I mean, I've been, you know, a lot of my experience is from the 90s when there was a glut of hotel rooms, and they would do almost anything. They would give us free coffee, you know, or let us bring our own food in. But there's been a shift. So one of the things to be mindful of is, what have you done lately? And I'm not dismissing anybody's experience here. I'm just simply saying, if you're like me, I haven't done a contract in a number of years. It's a different world than it was the last time I sat down to do a contract. And so some of these things are exactly some of the ways that people are beginning to, you know, we used to use the room block to pay for the whole damn thing, right?
Yep.
I mean, once you filled your room block, you were cool. And then it became room block and F&B. And now it's room block F&B, and they're still charging you room rental for the main meeting rooms. So there's been these shifts that go on, and one of the ways that people are currently negotiating is they say, forget about the room block, forget about the F&B guarantee. We're willing to pay $5,000 for our meeting space, so we don't have to worry about meeting these kind of expectations. So that's just one approach, and so much of it depends on the facility and the market that you're in, right? Small markets are different than big markets, you know. Orlando's different than Fresno. Okay, so anyways, I just want to capture that one, that that just isolating the contract, no F&B and no room block requirements in the contract.
Well, I think you just highlighted why it's really important that we get this updated information, you know, documented the best practices, because we have trusted servants who, you know, were not part of whatever we did in the 80s and the 90s conventions before the recession happened, and we have new, you know, best practices that we've identified. Jack?
Merit contracts. We have one contract that's putting municipalities, multi-year works very well for them. They get approved in advance. It's a county-owned convention facility with about 3,000 people attending. We just did contracts last week a month ago for five properties in Western Washington, so Seattle Metro South. None of those bids were possible without Food and Beverage Meadow. And so, of course, the challenge we have in NA is our beverages are so low. You know, we don't buy alcohol, so there are a lot of chains. You know that, Greg. There's a lot of chains that aren't near as interested in us because the bars are empty, and that's a good profit center for them. So what we try to do, though, with the contract specifically is a best practice. We had a thing last year where somehow Travel Book and the contract had a Saturday night speaker. We literally didn't have it. And that was discovered.
Oops.
Yeah. It worked out. It worked out. But as a response to that, we also have very well-meaning volunteers, and sometimes the contract coordinator, they bring us a bid, but the contracts aren't looked at close enough. So now before they're signed, we've rotated them through what we call our oversight committee, C&E admin, and we also include experienced members. So we have a couple members in our region. Some of you know Franny, she's one of them. A woman named Vandy, she's one of them that have been involved in contracts. I imagine they'll be floating them by me. So we allow latitude for the contract coordinator to float them by three or four members of the region that might say, hey, you can negotiate this, you can negotiate that, before it's actually signed. So between the proposal and when they give you the final thing that they've signed, have multiple experienced eyes in your community look at it. And we saved a bunch of parking in Coeur d'Alene. We just saved $18 a day in parking at the last minute because Julia caught something and we got down $6.
Nice.
Yeah. So I think it's a best practice to have multiple eyes.
That's a good one, George.
I think it's also important that we moved a couple conventions now from a facility that's quite a ways away from the international airport to the right surrounding the airport in at least one event space. And when you do that, one, you move into a market inside of a metropolitan market that's got a little bit more of a glut of rooms, and so they're a little bit hungrier to sell their rooms. And then you're also like right across the street from the International Hotel. So for something like WSLD, for instance, where people are coming from out of town, it makes it very convenient. There's no transportation costs that are involved, and you're not right in the downtown area, and you're right by the airport.
Nice.
So it's really important in the market that you're in to know not just the prettiest place, but also the most convenient place for people to get to.
Good. That makes sense. Beth,
one of the things we are lucky to have is we have a pretty consistent convention corporation board, and there's a couple of people here with significant experience with contract negotiations. So yeah, we've always taken into account the parking. But the other thing is we have 22 area conventions in Florida.
Wow.
And what happens is that now the convention corporation is willing to, if the area conventions wish us to, is to review the contracts before they're signed. And you have that wealth of experience on the convention board that's available to any area that wishes to utilize the
membership. That's good. How long are the terms on the convention board there?
They're usually, I think, four-year terms, or two, I think they're two-year terms, but everybody seems to have been there forever.
So. 40-year terms?
40-year terms. I think if they're willing to, serve there for life, they probably
do.
And what we do is if we need new blood, we kind of expand the board rather than throw anybody else off, you know?
Do most of the your 22 area conventions take advantage of the...
The areas within the Florida region take advantage, the other areas, although it's available to them, not necessarily.
So some do, some don't. There's a lady in the back there.
South
Hi.
Florida doesn't know.
Hey, Kathy.
Right after adult film conventions. some regional conventions, just the location of it. We are held to one hotel within Holdup. I know that when this convention started and first began, we had no clue it was going to grow the size, right. And we've been at what used to be the Hilton, is now Marriott, Burbank. We do not have another facility in the San Fernando Valley, we're going to keep it the San Fernando Valley Area Convention, to hold us. So along with what Steve was saying about, you know, we said goodbye to being able to negotiate rates and room and rates and meeting space and all of that, they're, you know, I mean, they have said they're ready to just take us, you know, for a ride. We've got our next convention January 2017 and January 2018 left on our contract. And, you know, on one level, our hands are kind of tied because they are who can accommodate us space-wise. So I don't know if staying is the best practice. If the convention is starting, if the convention is moving, if the convention is considering its location, that there be options. Again, I know that the, you know, pioneers of this convention, some who aren't living anymore, we didn't think we were going, you know, to the size that we are. So I don't know what our solution is there other than to, you know, to work with it, but something to consider. Terms of where
absolutely.
Location is. Yeah.
No, that makes sense. Thank you.
Can we shift to finance? If you have something about contracts, we're happy to hear it, but let's talk a little bit about finance.
Craig, right?
Yes, Craig had it. We always ask the hotel for a letter of credit so we can do a direct bill 30 days after the convention's over.
Say it again.
We ask the hotel so we can fill out a credit application so we have 30 days after the convention's over to pay the bill.
I see.
It's like a direct bill application.
Nice. I can see you got a lot of experience, Craig.
Yeah.
Cool. I like that. All right, what other good experiences with finance?
We have a corporate credit card.
Oh, okay.
And so we're not due to have to pay it for 30 days after. And it works the same way.
Fantastic.
It's through the bank that we have the corporate accounting.
So for your RSO?
Well, it's actually for the Frick Florida. We have two corporations in Florida. They haven't combined yet. We have an RSO Corp, which the region, the RSC fits under that, and then the Frick Board itself is incorporated on its own line. And they have a corporate credit card.
Okay.
Does your corporate card have rewards or points?
It does have cash back. And they do utilize the cash back to help pay off part of the credit card, though.
Nice. That's a good one. Hey, Don.
So my question is, as a nonprofit organization, again, can they say that we're a nonprofit to apply for one of these credit cards for our area?
Depends on if you... The fellowship is a legally nonprofit. Entities can acquire nonprofit status.
We're nonprofit.
That status... I don't know how that status affects your ability to get a credit card. You need your business. You need a credit card.
Well, so you're BIF in Florida, your corporation would be a nonprofit.
We're a nonprofit in certain areas. In other words, we have areas that are already incorporated as nonprofits.
Yeah.
We have the region is not a nonprofit, but the RSO is a nonprofit.
Yeah, but then the question I believe was
it doesn't affect the ability to get a credit card.
Right.
Okay.
That's
what
I'm thinking. I'm from the Greater Los Angeles area.
Yeah.
So I'm just kind of thinking forward that at times we're solvent financially and sometimes we're different, you know, we're not. And so our consistency of applying for a line of credit that way, the trust of service will get us all approved to apply for a credit card to cover our expenses. And
yeah.
I think that's very rare from our last
convention. Yeah, I don't think these are lines of credit. I think the use that you're describing here is to allow for the dust to settle from the convention.
Right, right, yeah.
And I don't think anybody's talking about carrying a balance on these. Are either of you talking about that?
No, not at all.
Because that's meaningfully different. I'm not saying that's wrong necessarily. I mean, I have a reaction to it, but it might not be wrong just because I'm having a reaction to it. It's different than what they're talking about. They're talking about, well, I mean, again, one of the challenges as we're leaving the event is that everybody's fried. You know, you think you know how much is in the the bank, but you're not absolutely positive. There's this trickle of expenses that could continue to come in after the event, and these two approaches allow for that to all settle down before you give the lion's share of your money back to the property where the facility was. Well, you're talking about something meaningfully different, worthy of a conversation, but different than this. You see what I'm saying?
A great option.
Yeah, I'll put it up here.
It's also the difference between a credit card and a charge card. A charge card is due with the 30 days and it's called.
Yeah, is anybody doing this?
Doing what?
Using a credit card to carry a balance.
No.
For their conventions.
No.
Use a
debit card. No.
I'm not going to put that up as success.
Yeah.
It's a bright idea, but it's not a success.
Okay.
So, in our region, we incorporated the region and let everybody fall under that. We have peers incorporated the convention committee.
And we'll talk about that. Let's talk about finance. I'm sorry, excuse me, Greg. I don't mean to cut you off, but yeah, let's try and keep it on finance.
So what
checking accounts, how money's handled at the event, those kind of things.
Quick one.
Yes.
We have written cash handling procedures that are updated and revised regularly that capture what we do. So we have written cash handling procedures we follow. General best practices, two people, and so on and so forth, envelope sealed. The second is we don't pass on funds or close out our events or even release numbers to the fellowship as a whole until after our final audit, which can sometimes be 4 or 5 months afterwards.
Wow.
We've learned the hard way it's safer to leave all the money in the account, do the final audit, make sure all the bills are paid. Of course, we tell RSE admin or anyone interested, what's in the bank and so forth, but we don't consider the event closed until a significant period of time has lapsed and the final audit is done and the event is open.
So you're talking about forwarding funds, not paying bills. You pay bills.
We sometimes find bills trickling in six days after a vendor misses something.
Who performs that audit?
Our region has an auditor person.
Okay.
We have audit procedures. We're a little different. I won't get into that other than to say that our corporation and our region are basically the same entity. So we have an auditor that performs audits twice a year in all of our accounts.
Nice. Excellent. Bonner, yeah.
Bonner Addict. Also, our conventions subcommittee, the members run the cash registers for merchandise and registration at our conventions. To relieve the host committee of having anyone with less than optimal amount of clean time, and there's a five-year clean time requirement to run a cash register.
We changed it. We trust you, basically.
Okay.
Do you train any cash register training?
Yes.
You want cash register training? Raise your hand. Cash register training.
We have that. Okay.
Our board heads up all of the subcommittees of the convention. Each subcommittee is headed up by a board member. And so the registration and merchandise are both headed up by board members. And therefore, the whole board is involved in the audit. And we have a CFO that audits the books the same way.
So all of the subcommittees are headed up by a convention corporation board member.
So there's experience there from the beginning, and the cash is handled that way, and it's deposited nightly so that there's nowhere, nowhere is it left. Two people take it to the bank every
Always
night.
Two people with the money. It's never left with one person.
Two people with the money and two people for a night deposit so that it's not
nice.
Hanging out.
Okay, good. Hey, Mac.
My issue has been with fundraising and startup capital. Here in this region, our convention is constantly having events as fundraisers. And my input to them over the years has been, well, why don't you guys build up a fund? If it costs $100,000 to put on a convention, keep $100,000. Free up these days that you hog up for fundraising for other activities, like a regional activities. This event, WSLD, could have used a couple of those weekends to have fundraisers of their own, but it was already hogged up by the convention. So, and somebody brought up size. If size and moving to a bigger venue is an issue, then have we gotten too big? We need Do we need to relook at this controversial issue of if you don't pay to register, you can't attend the event?
Right.
Hmm. Good question.
Meetings are free.
And so on the seed money, what you were saying, the practices where you come from is developing a seed fund that covers the cost of the whole convention in advance, as opposed to holding fundraisers along the way.
Right.
Okay.
Our region doesn't have fundraisers.
How does your region accrue what it needs?
The convention committee now, or the convention board, has enough experience that they know what they need, and that's helped. And seed money and everything else is passed on to the region.
Okay.
Which is then obviously ends up here, but they hold enough money to host the convention if nobody registered. And they hold that every year, and we have fundraisers occasionally, usually the May RSC prior to the convention in July is dedicated to the convention itself. And the venue is picked by the convention, and there's an event that promotes registration, early registration to the convention, but there's no fee to attend the event. It's not an attempt to raise funds. It's an attempt to raise awareness.
Nice.
Who receives your bank statements?
Auditor.
The CFO of the board.
Okay, I'm trying to force a success.
If more than one person receives it, your statements, right? There's a couple statements go out.
Yeah.
Duplicate statements.
The CFO and the president of the board.
So the treasurer is not the only person to get a bank statement.
Yes.
Right. The treasurer is not the only person to get a bank statement.
Correct.
It's a huge success.
Correct.
That's generally accepted accounting principle. That's the way the world works, right? When we have that kind of account, right?
So, glad you brought that up. So more than one set of eyes in the bank statement, more than one person receiving it. Bruce, did you have your hand up?
Yeah, I was going to comment on that fundraising thing. In Northern California, we have seed money, too. The convention perpetuates itself on its own money, but I think the BOD is in control of that account. Right. So the NCCNA has that money, but it's not the real money. It's the BOD's money. It's the region's money. Whoever's money is, the accountability is to another body.
Let me ask a question related to fundraising, because related to fundraisers, is there anywhere that's harder to manage the finances than around the fundraisers? Do you disagree with that? The fundraisers seem to be the place the hardest to keep track of what's going on with the cash.
Yes.
Is that a reasonable statement?
Yes.
Greg, your hand was up.
Yeah, I was going to say that our convention treasurers automatically become the board member.
Okay.
And so therefore, the convention treasurer, the CFO, and the region treasurer are the three people who have access to the account. They always know who's coming.
There's signers on the account.
Right.
Three of them.
Doesn't have to know how many signatures are on the check. There's multiple signers on the account.
Yeah, correct.
Three of them. The treasurer who becomes a part of the corporation. Okay. Stuart, hi. Yes. Yes, Stuart.
It's Stuart. So let me suggest kind of two things that I found that work on building controls for money handling is if you have a large enough infrastructure, have the person controlling the truck book, not the assignment.
Interesting. So person controlling the checkbook, not be a signer.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
And in Florida, we had set this up with our special worker, had the checkbook and had control of it and was audited on. And what they needed was a check request form signed by two signers.
Nice.
Before the check was issued, because the banks don't recognize our little two-signer bullshit.
So there's a solution to that challenge.
Yeah. So the non-signer that controls the checkbook is the one that does not issue a check until they have two signers on a check request form type of thing. The other is a new position that we've created a couple
couple of areas that it's involved with an alternate treasurer or vice treasurer who is not a signer on the account. And their primary job, besides just sitting around waiting for the treasurer to die or go away, is an auditing function. Yeah. And so what we do is we suggest that at each area, region, whatever committee, is that the report from the vice treasurer is I've reviewed the report and all of that from the treasurer, and I concur and I agree. And their job is to look for mistakes, help problem solve, like be that auditing function, that other pair of eyes that makes it harder for somebody to falsely accuse a treasurer or something, or somebody that's needs a little help with supervision.
My question is, how cost effective is that as far as the accounting firm that charges a lot of investors?
Well, that's separate from your audit. This is more of an internal controls.
Yes.
What we're talking about is kind of creating an opportunity for it to be hard to accuse somebody of something when it didn't happen. Make it a little bit harder for some funny business to happen if somebody's rent is due and they decide to kite some money or something.
Yeah, I get that. So, if you had put Weinstein's accounting service or something like that, right? How much would Weinstein charge fellowship?
Well, that depends on if Weinstein is partner in a 21st firm or Weinstein is just scratching out the. Like I say, the audit, an internal audit is a little bit different than the external audit. The external audit is more of an accounting process. The internal audit is more of building controls to make sure nothing funny. It's kind of like our have two signers on the account, make sure that.
So this doesn't cost us a dime. This is just a trusted servant. Right. Yeah. Trusted servant. Checking the reports, checking the bank statements, checking the bills, making sure that everything that's written is right. And let me just offer one more thing and we're going to move on. I've never talked to anybody who's had money go missing that has a bank statement that's going to more than one person and has a treasurer not as a signer. I've never talked to anybody in Narcotics Anonymous, and I've talked to a lot of people about money going missing that's had these two things present in their process and still had money go missing. Don't misunderstand me. If somebody wants to steal from us, these things aren't going to protect us universally, but they protect a huge majority of how money goes missing in NA.
I'd also, one last thing, I'd like to suggest that we should be very wary when getting into electronic banking and the functions of electronic banking. One thing that goes on the fine print that you're signing away is a lot of your protections in case of money business in the account. So often it seems like a great convenience to be able to, in viewing statements is different than online banking and doing transactions online.
Be very
wary about what protections you lose by doing online banking.
Right, the convenience of online banking trades off the protections that we figured out. And online banking is also another example of the many changes that have happened over the decades that we've been holding conventions. That didn't used to exist. Many of these changes that we're talking about didn't exist before. So what we're going to move on to, you can change the slide, Dee. And this final section of this workshop here is to identify what topics would you like to see covered in a conventions toolbox and in an events toolbox. What form should they take? Are we talking about templates, lists, some paragraphs, some written material on and topics on registration best practices, money handling best practices, committee best practices, the structure, speakers, programs. So what topics would you want to see and what forms should they come in that would be most helpful? Mac and then the gentleman over there.
We're going to brainstorm a list. No bad ideas. If you want to manage people bringing their pets, we'll put it up there. If you want a chapter on that, we'll put it up there. And then everybody gets some dots, because we like dots.
Dots are good.
Everybody gets dots, and then whatever three ideas that you think are the best from the list that we come up with, whatever two ideas, Dee's being a little stingy with the dots today. We're only giving two.
Got Dee.
We can do two or four.
We can do two. Okay, because remember that what we're talking about initially is we're not going to be able to cover every topic. We're not going to give a comprehensive handbook to the fellowship in a short period of time. We're looking for, what are the biggest fires? What are the things that we can address most easily? What are the low-hanging fruit? What other metaphor can I use? We're just going to end up with like a half a dozen or maybe 10 topics all together. So we're trying to gather not only best practices, but what you think needs to be in that booklet. So that's what's going to happen here next.
Right.
So there were a couple of hands up.
Yeah, there was Mac, and then there was the gentleman over here who had their hands up first.
So just fire away.
I've heard it mentioned a couple different times here this morning about using the regional convention for more of a public relations effort. One, dealing with the public, and two, making the fellowship more aware of public relations service opportunities.
Okay.
As opposed to just throwing us a big party.
Right, got it.
Okay, good. Yes.
I'd like to see, first of all, vendors. Obviously, the editors, alternative merchandising, or have access actually.
Bless you.
And then also, too, that fellowship for our particular committee covering the speakers and giving them rooms and airfare and accommodations and all that. I mean, the primary purpose is carrying the message. So I understand the cost involved in getting to a particular place from Los Angeles to Tennessee and cover some of that. But to get a room or something, we're going to give newcomers or charge the newcomers price for having a room, right? It's like, I don't know, it's kind of
right.
Okay. All right, Craig.
Okay, a letter of introduction and an RFP. I don't know what RFP is.
Request for proposal.
Beginning of a contract process.
Right.
So you're talking about something like the toolbox should have sections about
when to put in the RFP.
And list the bullet points of things that you should include for the best practices in dealing with vendors, in requests for proposals from hotels or from vendors.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
And a letter of introduction and a thank you letter after it's over with. You should always thank them.
Okay, so a list of written communications, like thank you letters, like letter of introduction, like invitations to professionals whom we may want to invite, right? So sample letters.
Absolutely.
That could be sample letters so that we can take advantage of the public relations opportunities so we can present. Template of a check request form. I'm going to make sure that gets recorded. Template of a check request form. That's a good one. Got that in there. And we are actually recording everything, though.
Yeah, I'd like to see guidelines, both for a host committee and for a conventions of that subcommittee available.
Guidelines for subcommittees and host committees. Okay.
Sample guide.
Jim.
Frequency and the purpose of conventions.
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you, Jim.
Something about the frequency of conventions and the purpose of conventions.
Okay.
There we go.
Guidelines. And host. Frequency and purpose. Okay. It's Bill, right? I know you're Region 51, but I haven't heard your name.
Dennis.
Thank you.
Something about some simple guidelines for
treasurer guidelines.
Treasurer guidelines.
Okay. Financial guidelines.
And along with that, spreadsheets, like sample spreadsheets to use with all the line items. Simple ones.
Sample spreadsheets.
Would you want sample just printed spreadsheets as an example or an actual electronic spreadsheet?
Electronic spreadsheet, like an Excel spreadsheet that shows exactly like it's you miss things otherwise.
So the toolbox could actually contain some files. The electronic files that you could get from, the NA.org site. Okay, that's good.
We're having to create
files. Right. Stuart.
Yes, so Greg mentioned RFP, but I'd suggest a topic of site selection would be pretty good covering.
Nice.
Describing an RFP, describing how to use convention visitors and bureaus.
So everything that could fall under the umbrella of site selection.
Yeah, almost a topic on what to look for in a hotel, what to look for in a contract, red flags to consider. The other broad topic would be convention planning in relationship to your single point of accountability. So,
say that again.
Planning. Your committee planning function in relationship to your single point of accountability. So do you have the convention incorporated? Is it a separate committee? How do you balance the trusted servants doing their job versus that accountability back to, are your budgets approved by your single point of accountability or your speakers? You know, just addressing those broad topics, like the selection of board members for your thing, that those often create a lot of controversy. So being able to address the topics in terms of how to find that right balance that where we're accountable but don't need to pick every reading at a regional level.
Okay, thank you.
A viable convention information committee, subcommittee. For like having a table at a convention for area schedules and just basic information surrounding the host hotel, things to do in the area.
So for the hotel, for the community,
yeah.
For the program, the convention itself, the whole
yeah.
comprehensive information desk yeah. or unit.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, we do Bruce. That. We have our hospitality partner host, and they take care of all that.
Hi.
Hi, my name's Sasha. I'm an addict. In Rio Grande Region, this is our third year of using timelines. So we have created them.
Timelines. Timelines.
And all the timelines from the committees match up to each other, and it's been incredibly useful to us.
You send us a copy of your timelines? I'd like that. Thank you. So timelines, Rio Grande.
Maybe some other project management.
Right. Sample timelines.
Like what? Project management tools. Give me some examples.
Who just said that about project management tools?
Stuart,
did you have some? Steve asked for some examples. You mentioned some project management tools,
yeah.
like a timeline
like
and.
Charts or.
What charts?
Gap charts.
Gap charts?
Yeah, they're kind of timeline assignments and
okay.
Yeah, there's a whole series of under that category project management of who's assigned what sort of time frame, the priority progress.
Okay.
There's some great
nice.
Tools you can use on like Google Apps that you can do collaboratively, or there's things like software tools that you can get to help.
Okay. So, yes.
I'm an editor, Joe.
Hey, Joe.
So, something I didn't hear, maybe it was covered in a it's not particularly a single toolbox item. It's the idea that commitments are only as good as the paper they're written on, as in starting with contract negotiations, multiple experiences with the hotel not quite realizing that they have had a commitment because it was orally, a convention committee negotiators saying, well, they said they'd do this. Right. And it's like, okay, right. personnel's changed the hotel, show us where it is in the contract. And then right. our own people not quite remembering the merchandise that was put out to them or the key that they picked up, just documentation on who has what and chain of custody.
So best documentation practices so that we can survive change of staff at the facilities or at vendors, change of our own volunteers. Okay.
Well, you're past nuts and dots. You know the rules about dots, right?
No.
You can't sell your Dodge. You can't trade your Dodge. You can't keep your Dodge for tomorrow. You can't put half a dog on one idea and half a dog on the other idea.
Right. What's that? I think, can we do the dots now, Steve? Can we do the dots now?
We need to do the dots now.
All right. You know, we start on time and we end on time, so take your dots. The two furthest over are the toolbox contents. The toolbox contents are the two on the left. After you've put up your dots, don't walk out of the room yet. I got a couple of guiding principles, the Spirit of Our Traditions books to give away.
So you get done quick enough, we're going to give away a couple of books. You get done fast enough.
So do your dots. So this is October 2016. Is there anybody who has an anniversary, as we call it on the East Coast, or a birthday, as you say, on the West Coast, this month?
I do.
You do?
Yeah, October 1st.
October 1st? How many years?
12.
Ah! You get a guiding principle. Happy anniversary.
Nice, thank you.
Lady over there. 20 years? 20 years on the 14th. September.
Okay, John S., who's running around here, got 30 years on the 4th of October.
Is that right? Is he here in this workshop today?
No.
At some other workshop. All right, other books, other workshops. 36 years on September 26th. What do we think?
Yeah.
That's pretty phenomenal.
Drug test.
I'll do a drug test. Happy
anniversary. Hey, so that's another part of this. That just reminded me, one of the things that we want to do, we ask you to send your input, but not only your input. This group of people, all of you have resources that you use, guidelines, templates, timelines, tools, forms, all of that stuff is important and valuable to us. Please, send it to us. WorldBornLinda.org, send it to me, it's SteveHardLinda.org. Send it in the mail, you know, however you can get it to us. We want copies of those materials. We'll likely do two things with them. First of all, we'll put them up on our website so other folks can see them and use them, as long as you don't have a problem with that. And then the other thing that we'll do is it'll be a collection. It'll be the library of material that's hopefully used to help build some of the stuff that ends up coming to the top as a part of this project.
And again, I also want to remind everybody, you know, we did the planning part when we did our surveys and selected these projects, and now we're this is still actually part of the planning cycle here. In these 2 years, we're gathering input and information as to what we want to see in these toolboxes. And when we come to the conference in 2018, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, that we'll be coming with project plans. You'll see those in the CAT prior to the conference in 2018. That's going to tell you everything that we learned during this planning 2-year cycle here, and that this is what we've heard, this is what we received, this was the input that the communities, the members, the convention committees, the delegates, everybody gave us, and then the doing will be between 18 and 20 on this particular project. So The planning does not end today. It didn't end at the conference. This planning goes on throughout this cycle here. We're counting on you to convey to your regions, your areas, your members who have experience with these particular issues here, whether it's contracts or site selections. Maybe they have professional experience in addition to their service experience, to give us input during this 2 years of planning this tool.
Okay, last thing. Web meetings, we'll be hosting web meetings. There's going to be a web page at NA.org. Please participate in the web meetings and also share that information with people in your community. We're done 3 minutes early. How's that?
Okay. I think we did good. Thank you.
What is this over here?
Food and beverage.
And feel free to take pictures of the sheets and what we came up with. 36. How cool are you?
Scary.
I didn't get everything in the microphone. I'm sorry.
Oh, that's okay.